Are you looking to make a podcast? Well, if you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. First off, it's free. Nothing is better than free. Am I right? Anchor provides creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more services. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, which is very refreshing for very fresh, new podcasts looking to get their start. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Welcome back to the Swamp, my friends. I know it's been a couple of days since I've been away and haven't uploaded, and that probably won't be happening much often, if ever again, to be honest. As you guys know, I am obsessed with my upload schedule, and missing videos is not part of my forte. But I had a friend come visit me, and I haven't been feeling well, so it felt like a good time to take a little break. Anyways, we are back once again sharing some scary stories. These were sent in by viewers just like you, as usual. And if you have a story that you would like to share, be sure to submit it at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I would love to share your story with everyone here in the swamp. It's stories like yours that help keep this channel going. Now, without any further hesitation, let's get into these creepy and allegedly true stories sent in by viewers just like you. So this happened about 2 years ago when I was 20. A little backstory. I'm quite a small female. I was doing some shopping in town alone. I still remember that it was a warm Sunday afternoon. People were out with families, and it was a quite busy day in the center of the city. I had some free time, so I decided on paying my grandma a visit. To get to her place, you need to take a 20-minute bus ride from where I was. So, to the story. I was waiting for my bus, and I noticed this man staring at me. He wasn't much older than I, and I still remember him. He had like some sort of bright yellow hat on. I usually don't really care when someone looks at me, but this man was staring at me with some sort of anger. Like, I had done something to him. Most people at the bus stop were either facing the traffic or looking at their phones or the coming buses, but not him. He had his back to the traffic and was just staring at me. I had a weird feeling about him, but I saw my bus coming and just hoped he wouldn't get on it. Except, unfortunately, he did. I quickly sat in a window seat, and luckily for me, this old lady sat next to me. This old lady was like a shield between me and this guy. He stood next to our seat almost the whole ride, except for pacing around oddly a couple of times. I was already quite freaked out and was texting my boyfriend at the time. While he didn't actually do anything to me, I had just a really bad gut feeling. A few stops before mine, the old lady sadly got off the bus. The guy's behavior became even weirder. He sat next to me, which made me feel completely tense. I refused to even look at my phone or text anyone, in case he saw anything he could use to look me up later. I think he sensed me tensing up, so he got up and went back to either standing next to my seat or pacing around the bus. My stop came, and I waited until the last moments to get off the bus. Sadly, he also managed to get off the bus. What followed confirmed that he was indeed after me. I guess in an attempt to put me off again, he ran ahead of me on the road and kept glancing back. Him doing this actually gave me my only out of the situation. You see, if he would have kept walking behind me, I would have been forced to A, either make a run for the apartment door and hope I was fast enough to close the door before him, or B, run in another direction and just hope I would have reached my place before him. I was out of the city center now, and there weren't many people around either to help me. So in that split moment, I decided to turn around and walk in the other direction and dial my mom. It's pretty bad, but I decided to call my mom in case anything happens to me, so she would know who it was. I told my mom what happened, and she told me to make a run for it. I ran down the road, and there was a small burger place that would have a security guard. She told me to run for it and just tell them what was going on. So I did. I glanced back and saw the guy running after me, which almost made me cry from sheer fear. Luckily, I reached the burger place before he caught me. From the window, I saw him crossing the road. I guess him seeing me get into the burger place threw him off. I have no idea why he fixated on me or what his plans were if he caught me. I'm not sure I even want to know. One afternoon in California, I was exploring downtown for the second time, trying to make some really good photos and some videos. I took two TikTok videos and posted them, and one of them was playing a song called Juicy. This is important after a little while. After I finished up those two videos, I walked from a performing arts center to the nearest bus stop. It was about 3 blocks away. I was listening to the song Juicy on my AirPods, and it was only loud enough for me to hear it and no one else around. Finally, I got to the bus stop and waited. Then there was a homeless man riding a bicycle coming from where I was coming from. He yelled something, and I thought it was his way of telling me to move or something, so I got out of the way to let him pass. He stopped where I was sitting and started to tell me that I took his friend's phone. I kept telling him, "No, sir, this is my phone." "Did you just come from the Performing Arts Center?" "Yes, I did," I answered. "My friend said that you took his phone," he repeatedly told me. I told him that this is my phone and that I've had it for years. He told me he was about to drop me if I didn't give him the phone. I saw a city worker on my right side and told the worker that this is my phone, and I don't know why he kept saying that it's his friend's phone. He radioed for assistance and told me to put my phone in my pocket. The homeless man got upset and said, "Let me go get my friend, so he can see that it's his phone." I didn't say a word before he left, and he told me something that scared me. "You're listening to that song Juicy, right?" I didn't respond and he left. Once he was heading down the street, I saw my bus coming to my direction. I asked the city worker if I still needed to be here since my bus is coming, and he said I should be fine. I thanked the city worker and got on my bus. I'm so glad he helped me out in that situation. I would have been scared and probably would have been without a phone if it wasn't for him. I am a 27-year-old woman in Louisville, Kentucky. This story technically begins at birth when I was taken from the hospital into foster care, but it wasn't until the age of 21 that I finally got the identifying information I needed to find my birth family. If you're adopted, you know that your entire life is a feeling of a sense of emptiness and loneliness, just waiting for the day to see your blood for the first time. It didn't help that I grew up in an abusive, overly religious household with my adopted family. On with the story. And I am sorry in advance if this is long. So, at 21 I found them. Finally, I got the paperwork from the Kenton County Courthouse. I was only ever told that I was half Filipina, and had to be put into a Catholic household. At 18, I was told by no identifying information that I had 5 siblings at birth. My mother, whom we'll call Missia, loved to write and knit. My father, whom we'll call Lynn, was a bass fisherman who wrote love songs on his boat. So the idea in my mind was this Catholic family who just didn't have the funds for a 6th child and wanted to give them the best life. Boy, was I wrong. I first Facebooked Missia to find out her last name was different. Okay, they got a divorce. I Googled it first, and then a maiden name, and there it was. She was currently in prison for cooking meth. I focused on her first because I couldn't find my birth father anywhere at first. My mindset was, well, if she's in prison for making meth, I'm sure she has been arrested before. I'm not in the slightest a judgmental person, but merely wanted to see more photos of the woman who gave birth to me. I pressed enter on the Google search, and this became the beginning of something that has haunted me until this day. She was on the sex offender registry for life. I look more into it to find a court case that documents it. She allowed several men, including family members, to sexually abuse all of my siblings, including the boys. She would get off to men, doing awful things to her children, but this is something I later learned. I finally find Lynn, also in prison, 5 charges of incest, sodomy, the R word, and a few other things. I was in shock. My entire childhood and life changed. This idea of what I always believed vanished. Long story short, I find my youngest sister, that at first I believed was a cousin. Her number was on her Facebook. I call her and almost immediately ask, "Do you know what happened with our parents?" Or I tell her no, so she could speak her truth and freedom. My brother, a year older than me, had a learning problem, and Lynn took his anger out on him. He was thrown down the steps and his arm was broken. He was fed his own feces when his teacher told our birth parents that he had told her that he said that he was hungry and wasn't fed. My older brother was trained to beat up my younger brother for their sick enjoyment. They both were, you know, touched and stuff, but the younger brother went through a lot of hell. The older brother was the favorite, if you can even call it that. They locked the younger brother in a room for days at a time to starve him and beat him. My siblings would feed him scraps under the door. As for my sisters, my oldest sister was Lynn's pet and was always in some weird of love triangle with her, I don't even know. She had it the worst sexually because she would try to protect our younger siblings so they wouldn't endure it the way she did. Still to this day, she believes she saved the youngest sister, but she doesn't have the heart to tell her that she was still abused. They would be drugged and molested by anyone that would give Missia and Lynn money for drugs. They never had a steady place and sometimes they had a home of logs over a ditch to cover for them. They were later taken away after Lynn's brother killed himself after finding out because he believed that he could have saved them since Lynn had done the same to him as a kid. He shot himself in the head and our aunt and uncle finally somehow found out and got them out of there. The CPS worker who had been working there for 30 plus years proclaimed that she had never even seen anything like that. I also heard that when he was in the military, he killed a prostitute by strangling her and leaving her to die. That's a whole other story. This is only scraping the surface, but I never have seen so much evil in my life. I am not religious by any means, but I can say that I was saved. Hello, Swamp Dweller. I am a New Orleans urban explorer, but this is by far my worst experience. I always had a dream of going to Paris. Not to see the Eiffel Tower, the Louvre, or any of the typical tourist hotspots, but actually to see the Paris catacombs. I had been urban exploring in an abandoned building and cemeteries of my hometown since I was probably 10 or even younger. I've even traveled to a couple of other states just to document my findings. Normally, the scariest thing I would see would be a homeless person or a creepy statue in a graveyard. Nothing to feel that threatened by. But in 2014, when my older sister told me that she would be traveling to Europe for a vacation over the summer, I begged to come along. I was 18 then, and desperate to get away from the humdrum of everyday life, and finally fulfill my childhood dream of going to the catacombs to explore. I had been planning it out for years. I would enter through the tunnel that I had seen YouTubers enter through online, bring a fishing reel with hundreds of yards of fishing line, and at each end of the line, I would attach it to the entrance. I would let out the slack, attach the reel to my backpack, with basically a fallback system so if I got lost. When I was done, I would simply reel my way back. It had made perfect sense to my narrow-minded teenage self. I wanted to go to the areas of the catacombs that people hadn't seen in hundreds of years. To go where no one else had been before was my dream as an urban explorer, and to me, there was nothing more exciting than going where you knew nobody else would be and places that were forbidden. There'd be no one ruining the moment by bumping into a fellow explorer. So, after weeks of convincing, my college-age sister agreed to take me with her. It took a lot of talking to get her to agree to bring her little brother along. But with help from my parents, she decided she would make the best of it. First, we went to Dublin, then London, which to me was pretty boring. Then across the English Channel to our first stop in mainland Europe, Paris. I tried to get her to come with me, but she noped right out of it, insisting on seeing the beautiful city instead. And who could blame her? While she wanted to see the Eiffel Tower and all that other good stuff, I stayed at the hotel and waited for the evening to come when the weather cooled off a bit and made my way to the entrance by myself. First by cab, then by foot. As I made my way back towards the crevice that led into the infamous Paris catacombs, I felt eager, almost energized. I stood at the entrance and looked into the pitch black and almost immediately crawled in. Once inside, I took the end of my fishing line and tied it to a big stone. No way I was going to get lost. I turned on my dollar store LED flashlight, cheap, right? Let out the reel and started my journey. At first, I snaked my way through what seemed like dozens of rooms covered with graffiti and evidence of teenage parties that famously took place there. After what seemed like an hour of reading what were almost definitely French curse words all over the cave system and ghoulish figures spray painted on the ancient walls, there seemed to be what I was looking for. On the other side of a large room I was entering, I could see the bare wall with no sign of human disturbance. Great, I thought to myself. Now the work really begins. As I drew closer, there was a shallow tunnel on my left that seemed to go only about 20 yards before a dead end, rubble strewn about. So I looked to my right and saw a narrow tunnel leading directly from the dusty room. It was so small that I would have to crouch just to walk through it. Somehow, no matter how much I shined my flashlight down it, I couldn't see anything in the darkness, a total absence of light. It was the first time that I doubted the journey. Up until then, it seemed like fun and games, but now the feeling of aloneness dawned on me. If I encountered trouble, there would be no one to help, but I felt drawn to complete my lifelong quest, and with a gulp, I cautiously made my way in. With 10 feet inside, I noticed the bottom of the medieval passage had begun to fill with water. At first, I thought my waterproof shoes would do the trick, but I soon found myself crouched over, drenched, and drudging my way through the tunnel, with water up to my knees. The tunnel aimed gradually downwards, even further into the underworld beneath the city of Paris. Too late to turn back now. I kept going, and after a minute, there was a fork in the passage. One got smaller, narrowing to 4 feet tall, and the other got bigger. I'd say about 7. Not too hard to guess which one I took. I heard the catacombs originally served as a mining system in the Middle Ages, but as I made my way further, the place seemed anything but an innocent miner's workplace. After about 100 feet further, the walls on either side widened into what seemed almost like a lobby, and small rooms lined either side of me. I was beginning to feel very uneasy at this point. I had seemed to be so brave at the entrance, in that teenage party paradise just over an hour earlier. But now, I could not help but feel watched. I didn't want to know what was in these rooms, though I had a strong suspicion. My footsteps grew slower as they continued to kick up centuries-old dust below. I knew I had to leave. I took the fishing reel I had brought down with me in my hand and started to turn the crank, but there was no tension. After a couple of minutes of praying to God that the line would pull tight again, the end of the line slipped through my hand. I took my flashlight and examined it. It looked gnawed through like a dog had happily chewed through it like a play toy. "I'm screwed," I said to myself in desperation. All of a sudden, I heard a splash from the way I entered. At first, I thought maybe a rock had fallen into the water. I waited and turned off my flashlight. Almost the second I turned off the light, I heard what sounded like sharp, clunky footsteps furiously running at me, and I bolted to my left towards a network of increasingly smaller rooms. Each room I entered, I staggered over jagged items all over the floor. I have no clue how I didn't trip, especially with my flashlight still off, but I traversed my way into the room, the pile of objects becoming more difficult to manage each time before a mountain of these things prevented me from going any further. In the pitch black, I could hear heavy, unnatural breathing about 2 rooms away. I bit my tongue, begrudgingly looked around me, and took out my flashlight. Before I stood on a pile of bones, femurs, ribs, all the stuff you learn about in school, I was just mesmerized by how they were just stacked in front of me like Jenga blocks. I looked to my right, and there was a 3-foot-tall tunnel. I got on all fours and furiously crawled my way through the murky, foul-smelling water, flashlight clenched between my teeth. Finally, it seemed my stalker was gone. I couldn't hear the thing anymore, but I knew I couldn't go back the way I'd came. I was going to have to find another way out. With hundreds of miles of tunnels and passageways running below Paris, I knew this was a damn tall task, but I was not about to be caught by some unknown creature down here. Sometimes the tunnel would open up and I could walk, other times it would narrow down again, and I would even have to crawl, laying on my belly just to make it through to the other end. I was getting desperately lost. I was unable to remember from which way I had came, and the tunnels would often fork away and split, forcing me to make a gut instinct decision on which way to go. It was frigid now. My teeth clattered as I brought my soaking wet self slowly through the catacombs, now feeling as though these were my last minutes on Earth. My limbs felt as though they were made of lead. It's hard to believe that what was once my dream had turned into a person's worst nightmare, lost underground in the world's biggest cemetery. But I dragged my beaten self through the maze for hours, my flashlight starting to flicker. I would turn it off for minutes at a time, trying to conserve the cheap, dinky battery inside of it, feeling my way through with my hands. I tried many times to see if I could get cell service, but of course there was none. Last time I checked it, it said 4:17 a.m. I started at around 9 o'clock. I decided that it was over. I plopped down in the water, sitting crisscross. I turned off the flashlight and closed my eyes. In my mind, I said goodbye to everyone I knew, all my family members, friends, and even acquaintances. I decided to look at a picture of my family on my phone. I clicked it on, and found the best picture of my parents, my sister, and me, and stared at it. My sister was smiling in it, and I found my eyes welling up with tears. It made me feel worse that she would never know what happened, that her wonderful vacation would end up being a depressing disaster. My mind went quiet, and my limbs went numb, and I accepted that this was the end. How fitting for an urban explorer, huh? Just when I leaned my back against the wall, I heard a familiar splash about 50 feet away. I jumped and grabbed my flashlight and ran away like a roadrunner from the cartoon. With no bones to trample on, I was running at what seemed like an Olympic sprinter's pace, and I felt hopeful as those same clunky footsteps started to fade. I was starting to grin when boom, I collided headfirst with a wall. Dead end. Through my throbbing headache, I could hear the dreadful pitter-patter growing louder. Finally, it seemed to stop about 10 feet away, and that horrid breathing echoed in the passage around me. A step closer, and my hands were trembling. I decided to turn on the flashlight. If I was ready to die, I was going to at least know what finished me off and take it like a man. I flicked it on, and the sight before me nearly scared me to death before it could even lay a finger on me. It was dark gray, withered, ancient, void of emotion. What I saw before me was a disgustingly hunched yet still 6-foot-tall skeleton, jawbone hanging down, as though it was panting. Its empty sockets peered down at me, and though it had no eyes, I found myself in a staring contest with it. Soon, it started convulsing. I could hear a small whimper coming from its bones. It's the weirdest thing to explain. It grew louder, almost into a chuckle, and finally an all-out hysterical laughing. The shriek echoed throughout the lonely catacombs. Its bones shook and rattled with every painful laugh. It didn't seem to come from its mouth, rather it seemed to be vibrating from the skeleton itself. It sounded almost like a demonic joker, until it grew silent. It bent down from its already stooped position, unnaturally long arms stretched out towards me, and sprinted at me in full speed. I was still collapsed on the ground with a throbbing head. I did the only thing I could do. I leaped up and waited until it was about a foot from me, and grabbed its bony arm with my left hand, flashlight dropping into the water. I immediately took my right fist and slammed it with as much might as my entire body had, straight into the skull. Screaming like a middle school girl, I closed my eyes and heard a big crack. I was prepared to be attacked back in revenge, but silence followed. I slowly reopened them and picked my flashlight back up and pointed it around. Arriving at the ground below, the skeleton had lost all life. Now, just a pile of bones, front first, in the puddle at my feet. Its skull had been bent severely from its neck, now almost perpendicular to the spine. Had I just killed a skeleton? What was it even doing alive to begin with? I stared down at my hand, which is surprisingly unharmed. What the hell? I asked myself in amazement. How did I not have a nasty gash from where my aching knuckles made contact with bare bone? I decided to power walk away from the scene, in case the thing could still come back from the afterlife and approach me again. I cautiously waited until I was about 40 paces away to turn back with the light. It was gone. There was nothing in the water, not a single rib anywhere. If anything, this scared me even worse. I kept walking back the way I came, and all of a sudden I felt my confidence return to me, like how it was when I entered the catacombs several hours earlier. I felt strangely good, like something was urging me, telling me that I could find my way back. Deciding to attempt a miracle and retrace my steps, I conserved the flashlight light as well as I could. And, after a few more hours of dragging myself through the tunnels, after a combination of walking, limping, and crawling, I started to recognize where I was. Before I knew it, I was slithering my way back through the muddy passage into the endless rooms of bones. I turned on my flashlight to see the same pile from earlier, and even had the gall to laugh at it. "That's nothing compared to what I saw earlier," I thought to myself. I made my way through other rooms, through the hall, and back through the pitch-black tunnel into the large room. Now I looked at the far side and felt like I won the lottery when I saw a cruddily spray-painted SpongeBob on the wall. Civilization! Kind of. I knew my flashlight was about to go out, but in its last moments of life, I somehow found the end of my fishing line. Of all things it had gotten snagged on, it was a broken chair that some person had brought inside the room. I turned the light off and felt my way back to the entrance using only my hands and fishing line through the pitch dark. Not gonna lie, I tripped a couple of times and walked into a couple of walls, but I wasn't about to let that stop me now. Before I knew it, I could hear and smell the fresh air. As I reached the end of the line, I looked up to see the tunnel entrance. And with my last bit of strength, I lifted my cold, aching body through the crevice and into the entrance above. As I made my way into the morning light, I winced, my ears relishing the sound of the morning traffic and bustle of the city. I slowly walked through the streets of Paris back to the hotel. I had lost my phone in the process of being pursued and couldn't order up a cab to pick me up, but I was just happy to be alive at that point. When I finally got to the hotel room, I knocked on the door. My sister had opened it. She had tears in her eyes and looked as though she had been crying the whole night. She instantly threw her arms around me and kissed me on the cheek, saying, "I thought I'd never see you again. I was so worried." So we ended up enjoying the rest of our European vacation, making sure not to lose sight of each other after that. I told her, and everybody else for that matter, that I had gotten lost, but I never mentioned the skeleton that attacked me. Sometimes I wonder if that was even real. Maybe my mind started to play tricks on me, in some sort of hysteria and tiredness. I don't know. And that's probably a good thing. My urban exploration days are over now, but this experience has always nagged at my conscience. I came here because the memory and the whole ordeal just haunts me. Sometimes I wake up at night screaming, having nightmares about being lost underground or being chased once again. Maybe, by finally sharing my story, I can put this whole thing to rest. Thank you for sharing my story. Growing up, I always visited my cousin who lived in a not-so-great neighborhood. It wasn't that bad, but bad enough to have creepy neighbors. She's half Hispanic and was fairly pretty, so one day, she and I were hanging out around the end of her street. I was about 15, which would have made her 13 or so. We were talking about the boy she had a crush on and laughing about stupid stuff. I remember I was standing up while she was sitting on the curb when this car drives slowly by. We both look up and it's this Hispanic man, probably in his late 30s. He was looking at her smiling but never said anything and drove off. Honestly, we really didn't think much about it, and actually kind of laughed it off as what the heck is his kind of problem. A few minutes later, he drives back around, even slower than before though. He's closer now and is saying something to her in Spanish. She's always been an angry little ball of hate, and said something along the lines of, "I don't speak Spanish, creep." He drives off and we laugh again, before going back to talking about her crush. Again, just like clockwork, a few minutes later he drives back by. This time he looks angry and is still saying something in Spanish. This time I get a really bad feeling and pull her up off the curb, and start to pull her away. The lot that we were in front of was empty, overgrown, and had a way to get back to her backyard. He's starting to drive alongside the street and keeps saying things we don't understand, getting angrier and angrier. Me being a paranoid person, even at that age, I started to try to get her to run. I'm starting to panic. I think she noticed and she grabs my hand and runs. We run through the empty lot, not looking back to see if he is still there, or even chasing us. The way this empty lot is set up, you can kind of see the backyards of the houses on the street, so we hid behind some of the bushes, waiting for him to drive off. He does and we start running through our neighbor's yards, trying to get back to hers. We run as fast as we can to her back door. My heart was beating so fast. We get inside and for whatever reason we grab a knife. I don't know, we were kids. We look outside and from the kitchen, we can still see him circling the block looking for us. We hide and panic starts to die down. We end up laughing about it and decide to not tell our moms. It still creeps me out thinking about it, and I was terrified of being outside of her house from then on, to be honest. Later on, we found out that she told her crush about this whole situation. This guy happened to live in front of that creepy dude. The crush told his dad, who threatened the creep. Needless to say, I never want to be in that situation again. I know this might not be the most scary story you've ever read, but thank you for sharing it, Swamp Dweller. Thanks for listening to these creepy and allegedly true stories sent in by viewers just like you. Which one was your favorite today? Honestly, story number 4 was quite a wild ride to read. I had no idea where that story was going, and honestly, I really enjoyed it. What do you guys think happened in there? Do you think he just spooked himself, or do you think that he actually maybe went Mortal Kombat on a skeleton? I'd love to know. If you enjoyed these stories, please hit that like button. If you're new to the Swamp, why not subscribe and turn on notifications to never miss a new video, as I upload them almost every single day in all things natural and supernatural. If you're not aware, you can download your favorite scary stories from the Swamp on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, and just about every other podcasting platform you can find out there. If you guys made it all the way to the very end, the code word today is Blackened Wendigo. Comment that down below to let me know you made it all the way to the end, and to confuse anybody who doesn't. I love seeing how creative you guys get with your replies down there. Thank you guys once again for supporting the Swamp the way you do, and I'll see you guys soon with another creepy video.